December 8th, 2015. Stephanie reminded me over breakfast today that we're just a little bit over a month away from our launch date. That means 4 weeks or so from now, we're going to be living in a trailer, and just about everything that has to do with the way we live our life is going to change. I jokingly call what we're about to do living the dream, because from the outside, on social media, it may seem like that. The reality is, there's a series of calculated decisions and choices that have gone into this way of living. In today's episode, I'm going to share those with you.
You're listening to Adventure RX, an active prescription for the non-compliant. Not fire enough, that terrible thing. I want to talk me out of it. Not fire enough, that terrible thing. I want to talk me out of it. The Adventure RX podcast is a production of Living Vertical Studios.
Visit livingvertical.org for content and community that we have created as we are challenging the limits of type 1 diabetes through adventure. There you can also connect with us on social media and support our work by buying our photography. I want to welcome you to the Adventure RX podcast. If this is your first time listening, our goal is to explore the role of adventure as medicine. What does that mean? Well, I've lived with type 1 diabetes for 16 years, and one of the things that has really stood out to me is that the medical side of living with any sort of chronic illness is really pretty small when you look at the big picture of how much of your life is spent doing other things. So much of the challenge and the difficulty of living with a condition like type 1 diabetes takes place in our mind. It has to do with how we see ourselves, what we see our possibilities being, and how we deal with fear. And so for me, everything that I've learned about risk management, about being afraid, about making tough decisions in the moment, that I learned from diabetes, that I learned from having to take insulin multiple times every single day, knowing that if I took too much or not enough, that I could damage my body or possibly even harm myself, or kill other people if I were behind the wheel of a car, for example, and I went unconscious. That taught me about managing risk. And when I thought about managing risk as a teenager, I said, you know what? If I can do it in a context that I didn't choose, like diabetes, maybe I can take this into a context that I want to be in, like the mountains, like climbing, and apply these same strategies and principles. Well, long story short, I have found that being outside, being involved with nature, and adventuring, pushing my limits beyond what is expected of a person with diabetes is beneficial. It's good for me in a lot of different ways. And this podcast really goes into those different ways because I have committed my life more or less to adventure. And the content that we're talking about specifically in today's episode, episode 39, is how I have made various transitions in my life to go from living a conventional life to one that is centered around adventure. Now, leading into this episode, I want to be really clear that I don't think that the way I live is better than the way that anyone else lives objectively. I do think that the way I live is different. And so because of that, I want to share the strategies and assets, the ways that I have gone from living a conventional life with a chronic illness to saying, you know what, I want something different and I'm going to make that happen. That's really the takeaway point here. Because whatever the change is that we want to affect in our lives, there are always ways to make it happen. Maybe not ways to make it happen right now, maybe not a quick fix, but the point of this is to say that it can happen, and if we prioritize and orient ourselves in that direction, that's how we make it happen. I've been wanting to record an episode for a while where I talk about how I managed to quit my job and live the quote-unquote dream. I think it's really interesting to think about the question of what is stopping us from achieving the goals that we have in our life. Whether it's a chronic medical condition, whether it's a cost that we have, something in our personal life, a relationship, all these different things are obstacles that ultimately can be mitigated one way or the other if we prioritize what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Now, by talking about how I managed to leave my job and live the dream, and I say that sarcastically because there is no free lunch. There is no way out of having to make sacrifices and choices to get the things that you're after. And adventure specifically is one of those things that's romanticized a lot. If you look on Instagram or Tumblr or even Facebook, you see a lot of posts that really paint an unrealistic image or that only capture a certain part of the picture that don't really take into consideration how the young hipster couple in the back of their VW Vanagon are managing to, you know, have their feet sticking out the window and sipping their coffee first thing in the morning there and looking at like the Oregon coast. That's a great moment and that's a great image, but the nuts and bolts of how that lifestyle works on the day-to-day after that image has faded and it's time to go about daily life, that's a different story. And I share all of this not in hopes to that I'll inspire people to live the way that I'm living, because this just happens to be what I want out of my life, not what I think is best for everyone. But it is unconventional, and it has required sacrifices and choices and strategies to get from point A to point B. And that's the takeaway, and that's what I believe anybody listening to this can apply some of these concepts, either individually or in conjunction, because I'm going to give you 10 strategies that I have used that have enabled me to be able to do what we're doing, and to do this with my family. And those are things that I think that you can borrow and adapt to your own purposes. I don't think everybody should live in a trailer. I don't think everybody should live on the road. I don't think everybody should be a climber, although I want to go on record as saying I do think everybody should try climbing at least once, even if it's just in a gym, because it's really awesome. But that's a topic for another episode. What I want to convey is that if you're not happy with the way that you're living, there's a way and a system that can be employed to address that. And that's another topic for another episode. But ultimately, to just abbreviate that, it comes down to creating a list of ways that you can prioritize the change that you want to make. Whether it's where you live, whether it's how you live, the career you're working in, the relationships that you have, the way your body composition is, any of those things, it comes with making a list and setting yourself up for success with a handful of strategies. So I want to talk about the 10 things that I have used that enabled me to quit my job and live the dream. Number one is a realistic assessment of my situation. This means that there has been a time in my life where I could not go out and I could not leave my job. I could not do without good insurance. I could not take the risks that I'm taking now. And I think to start off any sort of process where you're trying to accomplish a goal, you have to have a realistic assessment of what your situation is, because the goal is to do interesting things and to get outside of your comfort zone, but it's not to take foolish, irresponsible risks. And so for me, analyzing that amounted to saying, okay, what are the skills that I have? How can I survive financially? How can I get the medication that I need to have? How can I do this with my family in a way that is not going to be responsible and or not going to be irresponsible? I'm sorry. And identifying the challenges and the pain points and saying, here's how we can target those things and work around them. And newsflash, it's taken many years. I'm 33 now, and for a long time, I was not in a position where I was able to do this. And it's taken me all of that time to get to a position where I can work around those things that are obstacles to my having the type of lifestyle, living on the road, and doing what it is that I want to do. So this is far from a set it and forget it, your way right away, or whatever other kind of corporate slogan you'd want to attach to an adventurous lifestyle. You have to start off by really getting down to brass tacks and saying, what is stopping me? And that's why I titled the episode as such, because you have to know what's stopping you, and it may be something very legitimate that's stopping you that will require a considerable amount of time and effort to work around, or you may be able to do a lot more of what you want than what you think when you actually look at it. But that all starts with a realistic assessment of your situation, what your obstacles are, and what your resources are. Keeping that in the forefront of your thinking, that is the first strategy that I use to enable my lifestyle. Number two, a supportive partner or spouse. Again, this is unique to my situation because I realize everybody is not married or does not have a partner, and so this may not apply to everybody, but having a partner and spouse that is willing to do these things and to put their back into lifting the load of an unconventional lifestyle is something that I cannot stress the importance of enough. If I were trying to survive on my own doing this without having my wife involved in this, it would be way, way, way more different. And even though Stephanie isn't always a visible part of what is happening with Living Vertical, having the support, and I suppose this could even be somebody who's not necessarily a spouse or partner, but having somebody who's really close to you, who's going to just be like, hey, just go and do it. You can do that. Like, you can do this thing. That's something that you can get from friends or family members, even in many cases. But it's important to have that person who is close enough to you that you respect them and that they will support you emotionally, I mean, and also certainly in our case with the spouse, there is financial contribution and responsibility in terms of like looking after Lilo and sharing that burden with me. But so many times throughout the years that Stephanie and I have been together, I've been afraid to take on the challenge of living on the road, living out of a trailer, even daring to suggest once we had a family that this was something that would be feasible. But time and again, she's pushed me to push myself. And having that person that is not going to throw it in your face when you fail, but that's going to help you think of workarounds and not going to let you take the easy way out. In other words, that says, look, we might fail when we do this, but let's wait until we fail before we consider this a failure. Let's go out there, put our best foot forward, and see if we can't make this work, because why not? We're, you know, in as good of a position as anybody can be. Let's go do that. And again, that goes back to having a realistic assessment, point number one, and doing that early work, but having that spouse that will help you do that analysis and then hold you accountable to really give your best effort to pursuing your goal, super, super important. Number three is sort of connected with number two, and that is to identify your support network. In 2011, when Stephanie and I started Living Vertical, we stuck our neck out by telling everybody on social media, friends and family, anybody that would listen, hey, we are going to do this thing. We want to change the way that people see diabetes because we don't think that it's something that should limit the way we live our life. We're adventurous, and we want to do something to push back against the stereotypes and the negative messaging that is so rampant in the world when we talk about diabetes. And we stuck our neck out there and got people aware of what we were doing. And from doing that, we found out pretty quickly who was in our corner and who was like, that is amazing. We want to help. We want to support. And the people who would encourage and be part of that as a support system, and the people who just couldn't be bothered and wouldn't care. And I think that sticking your neck out there and making a public commitment is really important, because until you do that, people aren't going to respond supportively. And I don't just mean financially support, I mean just emotionally and conceptually. Once you make a commitment, you will be surprised to see people in your life that maybe you never would have guessed. There were people that I had not spoken to since I had been in college who came out of the woodwork and were incredibly supportive. And it touched me so much that there were people who were, we were just, you know, vestigial friends on Facebook where we would kind of like things back and forth, but we never really had any deep interactions. And in 2011, I said, yeah, I'm driving across the country. I have a GoPro with me, and I'm filming a trailer for this project that I'm going to do in 2012, where I'm going to climb every single day for a year, and let's see what happens. And once I did that, I headed out on the road to kind of shoot a little bit of a trailer over that summer. I had people come back into my life in a way that previously had not been so active, and I was just amazed. And then there were other people, and this is something you got to be prepared for. There are other people that you're going to think are going to be really, really supportive and are going to be all over what you're doing. And they're just going to be like, yawn, next, not interested. And you have to learn how to be tough enough to deal with that, figure out who the people are who are really on board, and learn how to appropriately lean on them, not take advantage of them, but to really engage the people that want to see you succeed. Because there are some people who see you step out of the norm, whether it's from jealousy, some sort of insecurity on their part, or whatever it could be. Not everybody reacts positively when they see a friend or a family member do something unconventional. They get irritated and say, oh, you think you're too good for this type of lifestyle. And it's hard in some cases to communicate to those people that, you know, I don't think I'm better than you because you want to work a conventional job and have a house and a mortgage. It's just for me at this point in my life, that's not fulfilling. That's not what I want to do. Number four, downward social mobility. Everything, if you look in marketing, in the world around you, and the world around us is like 99% marketing. Any social media network you go on, everybody's marketing something to you. And the majority of what is being put in front of you when it comes to marketing is more, better, newer, faster, sexier, different, upgrade. And there isn't really any discussion of saying, hey, here's how you can do more with less. And so if you're in the mindset that you need more and that you need better and newer, you're going to have a much harder time. And one of the things that has been very, very instrumental in our ability to leave the lifestyle that we were in and go on the road, both in 2011 when we did, you know, started Living Vertical and did Project 365, and even now, again, as we're going back around now with our daughter, being able to say, you know what, we don't need to have a TV. We don't need to have, you know, all these extra clothes. We don't need to have all these extra shoes. We don't need to have all this extra backpacking gear. We don't need to have all of this stuff. And we don't need to worry about upgrading our cell phone. We don't need to worry about upgrading everything. We need to identify the things that we really need and look at the ways that we can just go against the grain in terms of marketing and say, you know what, we don't need this, we don't need that, we don't need the other thing, and just be ruthless in cutting costs, because there are so many non-essential expenses that in modern day life that we have, that when you embrace downward social mobility and you say, you know what, I'm excited because the less I need, the more I can do. I am not 100% over this. I haven't got it completely on lock. Like, there are some things that I can get rid of really easily. clothes are really easy for me to get rid of because it's like I wear the same thing all week. I change my socks and underwear, okay? But I, in terms of pants and shirts and stuff, if it doesn't smell and it works good enough for what I'm doing, unless I'm going out or I'm doing something where I'm engaging with other people socially in a, you know, business environment, I'm going to wear what I want and wear what's comfortable, and it's easy for me to let go of clothes. Things like climbing gear, backpacks, things like my cameras, my lenses, audio equipment, things that are directly related to how I make my living through media work, letting go of those things is a lot harder, and that's something that I've been working on trying to embrace as we get ready to head out onto the road to really say, you know what, I don't have to have the biggest, the best, and the fastest. What I have to have is the ability to adapt and do more with less. Number five, I have been able to identify income opportunities and marketable skills that I have. And when I say identify these things, I mean identify their function and their utility outside of the traditional corporate environment. Because I can do a lot of media work. I can record audio. I can edit. I can shoot photos. I can edit. I can shoot video. I can edit that too. I can write and do a little bit of dabbling with web design. I do social media and coordination and engagement, getting people involved in the work that I've been doing through Living Vertical. And doing that on my own really highlighted to me what it is that I'm actually capable of doing. And when I look at other organizations and I look at myself and say, okay, what could I bring to somebody else? I have a whole list of skills that I developed on my own time and through my own interests and effort, rather than just saying, okay, here is the job title that I would apply for. I look at what it is that I can do and say, hey, I can see that you can use this skill. And that's what I currently am doing. I'm doing independent contract work where I do audio, video, photo, and writing in order to facilitate these needs that other organizations and other companies have. And the big central element in that for me is being able to do it without having to be in an office. And it turns out that there is a market for that type of work. But you have to see yourself as the skills that you have and be looking for the skills that you have that are marketable and develop them as such, instead of thinking about it from a position of like, okay, how can I get this job? Because a job is something that exists in a finite context within an organization. A skill is something that can translate to a variety of different jobs. And so even in jobs that I have taken and will take in the future, the goal is always skill acquisition, because that enriches me in the long run. That gives me more opportunity and more diversity and more value. Because the goal of a person should be, in my opinion, to be useful in the world around you and to say, I can do this and I can contribute that as a result of the work that I do. And a lot of times when we are sort of in a job mentality instead of a skills mentality, we're looking, how can I get this job, instead of how can I develop these skills and where could I possibly go with those skills? Because once you start looking outside of the job context and you start looking in terms of skills, it broadens your scope a lot in terms of organizations, companies, and places where you can apply those skills in order to make money. And certainly part of that has been being able to deal with the idea of being an independent contractor as opposed to having the support of an organization. And there are pros and cons to that, but ultimately that's where I landed. Number six, ask yourself, what can you do without? This kind of goes back to number four, downward social mobility. What is it that you can do without? And there are a lot of things that we don't want to do without, but when we're faced with the opportunity to gain something that is significantly better, giving up something like TV, giving up something like the comfort of more space, it's not the worst thing in the world. But again, it's an important question to ask because that's my answer. Giving up TV and giving up more space, that's something I'm totally comfortable with, but what can you do without? Because once you answer that, you can start focusing your priorities towards what it is that you are trying to gain. And sometimes it's a matter of what can I do without for now, because I'm going to get back to the point where I can have all the things that I want, but for now I need to really focus and prioritize that goal. And it's like, I listen to the Dave Ramsey show, or I used to, it seems like it's the same stuff where he repeats basically what I'm saying about asking people what they can do without and getting them to pay off their debts so that they can get back to a point where they can spend money on things that they want. And that's a point that has really, really helped and enabled me to be able to do these kind of things, is to say I can just slash and burn on the things that I'm spending my money so that I can do so much more with so much less coming in. Number 7, goals and planning to execute those goals. Making a list, small steps, saying here's where I am, here's where I need to be in order to get there. I have not always been in a position where I had a partner who was able and willing to go on this type of adventure, who was willing to support it, because it took me a while to be able to develop what I'm doing, to pitch it to Stephanie in such a way that she would feel comfortable about putting herself and our daughter in this sort of a situation. That took years to develop those skills, to develop those opportunities for myself, to get to the point where I could say, you know what, if we go out on the road, I can get a contract here, I can get a contract there, I can guide in this part of the country, here's how we can make it work. Take time to identify those steps and set goals in small enough bite-sized pieces, because everybody can't do anything that they want all the time. But I firmly believe that most people can do a lot more than they suspect if they put their feet on the path that will lead them to where they want to be. And it starts with those small goals, those unsexy outcomes that are not, you know, where you just change little things that add up into big things, and you have to put it down on paper. And for me, a lot of it has been putting it out there in the public between Living Vertical on social media and the website and engaging other people in that process. I'd like to think that my doing that has been beneficial to other people. It certainly has been beneficial to me by giving me more incentive to actually follow through and execute those goals. Small goals, break it down. However big your final outcome is that you're looking to achieve, break it down into smaller, bite-sized pieces. Number 8, minimal debt. Again, this ties in with number 4 and number 6, being able to do more with less. And having debt is a big suck on your finances. When you owe money, you are in bondage to an extent. You do not have freedom to come and go as you please because you're on this leash. And having more stuff and all the nice things that we want and that we tend to get, even though we don't really need them. I've gone through this a lot, and I had an episode, a couple episodes back, where I talked about priorities and prioritization of goals, where I talked about how I would go and buy stuff that was kind of related to climbing, but didn't actually do anything other than just sort of anesthetize my pain at kind of being in a situation where I couldn't climb as much as I wanted. And it took a lot of work for me to get out of that way of thinking. But when I started to look at debt as being the thing that was causing that pain and really made that connection between the two, where I said, you know, I can afford to make less money. I can afford a lifestyle that puts me closer to climbing more of the time, gives me the mobility and the travel that I want, where I can be in the places in the world that inspire me, I can afford that if I just get out of debt. And that is the starting point. Now, getting out of debt is easier said than done. But if you listen to the Dave Ramsey show, again, he's not sponsoring this. He has no idea who I am or that I even exist. But if you listen to that show, there are many examples of people who take radical action and in a dramatically short period of time, through self-deprivation in some cases, manage to get rid of astronomical quantities of debt. Personally, I don't have a huge amount of debt, and I never have, and it all started when I got out of high school. When I went to college, I said, how can I go through college and spend the least amount of money possible? So instead of having tens of thousands of dollars in debt because I wanted to go to a school that had a better name and a better reputation, I went to a school that was in-state, that was good, but not nearly as pricey. It didn't have the branding, if you will, and I saved a lot of money. And again, that was something that was over a decade ago that that happened. And so it's a process. It's not something where you just snap your fingers and say, oh, I'm going to go out and do this. It's a process that takes time. But by engaging that process, you can reduce your debt. And once you reduce your debt, your options increase exponentially. Number 9, a ripcord scenario and acceptance of that scenario and when it's appropriate to use it. What do I mean by a ripcord? Well, when you jump out of a plane or you jump off a bridge, if you're a base jumper, and you pull the ripcord, obviously that's when your chute opens. That's the stopgap mechanism. So having a worst case scenario to be able to say, what's the worst thing that can happen if I go out on a limb and I take this risk? And moreover, of that worst case scenario, how much of that worst is not reversible within about a year? And I got this, want to give full credit to Tim Ferriss and the Tim Ferriss Show, which I draw on frequently for inspiration because he has a lot of really cool ideas and ways of looking at the world and people on his show that talk about this stuff. But his whole thing is, you know, what's the negative outcome that is irreversible where you can't get back to the position that you were in within a year or two? And unless it's something that is so bad that once things go off the rails, you can't return to where you were before that happened within a couple of years, then it's probably a risk that is, you know, that you can take responsibly without it being a game changer or a life ender. Living Vertical could take off. It could get sponsorship. I've had opportunities in the past, and I think that's something that could happen again in the future. If it does happen, awesome. If it doesn't, awesome. I'm still out here enriching my skills, gathering ability to do things that are useful in the world, and at the same time, helping to change the way that people look at diabetes. And that's something that matters to me, even if I never get paid for that specifically. But at the end of that whole process, I'm still coming away with more skills and greater value for having invested my time. Worst case scenario, we run out of money, everything looks like crap. Well, that's no worse than the situation that we're in right now. That's really important. And having that predetermined point where you say, these are the circumstances under which I will pull the ripcord and bail on my dream. Because that gives you so much more latitude and so much more space to think clearly about what you're doing, where you can say, you know what, things aren't going great right now, but I can keep doing this. I can not get psyched out and not stop what I'm doing out of fear. Number 10. Having a reason to go for it and willingness to fail. Understanding that it has to be worth it to you to do what you're doing, even if everything crashes and burns and it doesn't work. And this is something that I struggle with a lot myself. I have to always be reminding myself that when I am the work that I'm putting into Living Vertical, I'm doing it because I want to. I'm doing it because it's my choice, because it's something that I want. It's an itch of mine that I have to scratch, really is what it comes down to. And it has the opportunity to be something bigger. It has the opportunity to go further. But even if it completely, you know, tanks, and this trip and this roadshow that we're doing with Living Vertical in the trailer, even if it completely goes off the rails, you know what? It's still worth it, because I will have answered the question of whether or not it's feasible. I will have clarity, and I will be able to leave that dream behind and say, you know what? It really wasn't for me, because I went and I tried it and I saw that it wasn't what I wanted, or that it wasn't feasible even with my best effort in play. Or I'll come away from it saying, you know what? I didn't get my goal accomplished. I didn't realize my dream because I didn't employ the right strategy. And I'll understand that next time around, here's what I need to do differently. And then, of course, start this whole process over to say, is it worth it to try to take a second run at this or not? And so those are the 10 strategies that I have used to enable me to walk away from my job and take on risk and to take on an unconventional lifestyle. Again, I don't think that everybody should or will want to do this, but I think it's interesting to share the ways in which we can go from point A to point B over a significant span of time and distance, and really examine the ways that the small choices that we make that seem like they don't mean much, examine the ways that those can add up and steer us from where we are to where we want to be. Thanks for sticking around and listening to the entirety of this episode. I would love to continue this as a conversation on social media, or even directly. You can visit livingvertical.org and find links to all of our social media accounts where we are very active. And if you send me an email, steve@livingvertical.org, I promise I will get right back to you, because that's the way that I do things. I feel like this topic is one that is going to be explored further as we really come to grips with what it means to be living on the road as a family. Right now, it's just theoretical. Once we get down the road a little bit, there's going to be more to add and maybe subtract from what I have said at this point. And I would love for you to be a part of that, honestly. Being able to have other people involved in what we're doing and sharing their success and their ideas and sharing my ideas back, that's something that is really awesome and something that I enjoy immensely. I would also like to ask that if you find any value in what we're doing here in this podcast and you want to support the work that we're doing, there's a real simple way that you can do that. Number one, just subscribe on iTunes. That's a huge benefit if you do that, because that way you will not miss any of the upcoming episodes that we have. We'll stay connected and we can take this journey together. Additionally, if you want to support our work, you can just share this podcast on social media with your friends. Word of mouth goes a long way, and when people know what you're getting out of this, they'll be inspired to listen as well, and so on and so on. So what we're doing, the work that we're doing to empower people with diabetes and change the way that people see this chronic medical condition in the public eye, is something that we cannot do without your help. And it's very simple to get involved. You can visit livingvertical.org if you want to get more information about how to help and to see everything that we're doing. You can also get our show notes at livingvertical.org, and you can get links to the musicians and the artists that have contributed their work to make this podcast more than just me sitting in my mother-in-law's closet talking into a cardboard box. So I would love to hear from you and for you to explore what we have at livingvertical.org just a little bit more. Next episode is going to be it depends. You let me know what you want to hear, because I actually recorded a second part to this. This was a little bit more glass half full, saying these are the ways that you can go out and do this. I recorded a second half to this episode that is, here are things to keep in mind that maybe would tell you that you shouldn't go out and do this. More of a glass half empty type of episode. If that's something that you are interested in, reach out and let me know, because that is my plan for episode 40. And until next time, please subscribe, visit our website, and remember that time alone is the one non-renewable resource that we have. Diabetes and any of the other challenges that we have in our life, they're significant, but nothing is worth giving up our time for, because if we let our challenges rob us of our time and dictate the way that we spend our time, then we're giving up our life while we still have it. We're dying before we're dead. And if diabetes is going to be the thing that strikes me down eventually, so be it. But until that point comes, I'm absolutely 100% committed to living the most of my life that I can on my own terms. And I want for everybody to have that same opportunity and to feel that same ability that they can take control of their life and go out there and do that. That's all I got for you guys today. Next week, we're going to have more of this. Again, we'll see you later.